I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 19 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a caprisque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is my good buddy Nick Reak from the Rabbit Hole Podcast. There you go. I almost forgot. I went down that rabbit hole.
There you go.
Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you for having me back, as always.
Yeah, always fun talking to you. Always enjoyable. There's always places to go and things to talk about with you. So absolutely. I really like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, yeah. So minute 19 begins with George confessing to his father and ends with George finally making a decision. So yesterday we ended things, you know, the last 2 days we've been watching this conversation between George and Peter, which is quite integral to the whole movie and the way that things are moving along and stuff like that. And you know, at the end, Peter sort of tells him, you know, that I think that your place, and he's not saying it directly this way, but he's basically saying your place is with us. You know, you're not going to make your $18 million.
Before he's 30.
Before you're 30. So you might as well come in and work at the building and loan, you know. And then today's episode begins with George saying, I know, Pop. I know that. I wish I felt that I've been hoarding pennies like a miser here in order to. Most of my friends have already finished college. I just feel like if I didn't get away, I'd bust. So, I mean, first of all, his little speech here is very interesting because I don't know if it's that he is somewhat embarrassed to say this in front of his father, you know, because he keeps changing direction with what he's saying. You know, he doesn't get a complete thought in here, you know, by saying, I wish I felt that. And then like a miser here in order to, and then he like jumps to the fact about his friends. And it's just the idea of just he needs to get out. He's been dreaming of this all his life.
Yeah, because I think it comes back to, and I think we touched on it, it might have been Tuesday, but maybe Monday, when we talked about how a lot of his conversation, it's heading towards, you know, him his true self, who he wants to be, what he wants to do. But then he kind of stops himself because he doesn't want to disappoint his father in a way. He still wants to, you know, be supportive of his dad and what his dad does, but he doesn't want to do what his dad does, even though he's apparently really good at it.
Yeah. I mean, go on, he's been doing it for a few years. And so he's like that. That's something that always makes me wonder, you know, when someone does something that they seem to enjoy and they seem to be good at, you know, and like, so, okay, continue doing it, you know, but apparently he's just not satisfied with what he's doing, you know, because he wants more. I think it comes to the point that George feels that he has a lot more to give, and giving, you know, by working in the building alone is not enough for him. He wants to be able to give even more.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that.
Right. I mean, the way that he talks here also is, you know, I wish that I felt that, meaning that I think he's sort of saying that I know I'm good at what I'm doing with you. Mm-hmm. So I wish that I would enjoy doing that more. You know, I wish I would feel more fulfilled with that, but since I'm not, I need to move along.
Yeah. And is it a weird, maybe he's mistaking it. Maybe he's mistaking for just because I don't have that passion here doesn't mean he couldn't find it. Or it doesn't mean that the job you work, you have to have that passion for it. You know, there's plenty of jobs that people work that you know, they're good at what they do, but at the end of the day, it's a way to make a buck because their passion is in other things. It's in their hobbies. It's in their family. It's just in all these other places. And I think that, you know, it's one of those things that if, when George gets older, like older, he'll start to kind of realize like, oh, you know, that's just the job, but the passion and the real life is, you know, the family here, is the friends here. I mean, it's the stuff that he doesn't even realize that he has. That's where the, you know, the real passion comes from.
Correct. Because he's so busy with everything else that he's doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's also part of it, you know, and then he says the fact that he's been hoarding pennies. And now what's interesting is that, you know, his father said earlier in the week that you know, his father's basically been saving the money in order to send him to college. You know, it's not that George has been saving this money. So he's saying, I've been hoarding pennies.
Interesting. Yeah, so then it kind of makes you wonder why.
Well, no, maybe it's for spending
how,
money.
Not why, but how.
Right, yeah, maybe it's spending money or whatever. I'm assuming he's getting paid something from the building loan. You know,
there's no way he's not. Yeah, he has to be.
Yeah. You know, so maybe he's been saving what he has in order to be able to use it for any extracurricular activities that he wants to do while he's going to be in college. You know, that maybe his father is, you know, is footing the bill for tuition, but he's got to pay for dorms or whatever. I mean, I don't really know specifically what the whole plan is or anything like that, you know. And yeah. So here, once again, we bring up a coin. You know, yesterday we had a little we had some conversations about nickels and dimes, and today mm-hmm. we're going to go with the penny.
Okay.
So where do you think the idea of a penny, and we're going to talk just about the American penny. You know, when do you think they first established the penny, which is also known as the cent?
I think that it wasn't until, I would say the early, it would be like a wheat penny or something, right? So let's say 1795.
Very close, 1787.
Ah.
And they even had, up until 1857, they had what was known as a half cent. You know, meaning that the penny wasn't the lowest denomination.
That today, blows my mind. You know, why not just make it the penny? Like, it don't make sense to me.
Well, again, it goes back to the idea of inflation, you know. So at the time, okay. You know, you could get more for your penny.
Okay, okay.
You know, and obviously the penny as we know it is known as the Lincoln cent.
Mm-hmm.
That has had Abraham Lincoln on it since 1909. Which was the centennial of his birth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
so it's a centennial.
There you go. Very good. That's
great. Terrible joke that was.
Very punny. No, it fits. It
that's
fits.
Terrible.
From 1959, which was the sesquicentennial of Lincoln's birth, until 2008, the back of the penny had the Lincoln Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they reached his 200th birthday, so they changed it. And now, do you know what's on the back of a penny?
Oh, I should, but I don't. What's on the back?
They have the Union Shield.
That's right. It is a shield now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know why I blanked on that so hard, but yeah.
That's
yeah,
okay.
It is the shield. It is that little shield.
Because you probably, you know, use more bills than coins these days, like most of
that
us.
That is true.
So the official name is a cent. The official name that people call it is a cent. The U.S. Treasury's official name is a 1 cent piece. And people refer to it as a penny because that comes from the British idea of, because they have a coin that was the same name.
Okay.
All right. Here, pennies is the plural, but in you know, not to be confused with pence.
Okay. See, I would have leaned towards the pence, but okay, makes right. sense.
Right. Now we talked about this you know, yesterday also. How much do you think it costs to produce a penny?
Isn't it like 3 or 4 cents to make a penny?
It's 2 cents.
2 cents.
Yeah.
Way off.
Yeah, so they ended up having to change the, you know, they've been talking for years that they want to change the composition of it so that it'll cost them a little less, but they have not done that yet.
I just don't know why we don't just knock everything off so it ends in a 5 or a 0. I just feel like, to me, that makes the most sense. But.
Right. Well, I mean, as I mentioned yesterday, the idea is that it probably, you know, they can sort of do away with currency because everyone's using, you know, electronic currency these days.
Yeah, that too.
You know, it's the whole idea that you know, we reached a point where, you know, people were buying things in the supermarket or whatever it is, you know, everything would end with a 9 or whatever it is. And, you know, sometimes you'd be able to get change and sometimes you couldn't, depending on, you know, how much is left over and all that stuff. But once people started using credit cards, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So basically, one of the problems of the penny is there's a bit of toxicity to it.
Okay. I can see that, unfortunately, but I can see that.
That's right. They used both zinc and copper in the 1980s. And basically, the idea is that if you swallow a coin, you can damage the lining of your stomach because of, you know, the way that the zinc acts when it's in an acidy stomach.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, you know.
Pennies tasted bad as a kid.
That's probably why. And apparently it's fatal to dogs.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Any penny since 1982, if a dog swallows it, it could be fatal for them.
Oh.
Also in parrots.
Parrots?
Mm-hmm.
Like the bird?
The bird. Parrot.
What are we doing with birds? I can understand if somebody, you know, drops a hunk of food and it falls underneath the table and a dog runs over to get it and somehow there's a penny under there and he gets into a chore. But how would a bird just get into your pennies? I don't understand that one.
Maybe if they're flying around the house and you have like a change, you know, like a little change dish or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird to me.
I've never tried to feed a parrot pennies.
I've fed birds peanuts before, little peanuts and stuff, but never pennies.
No. I was once, a few years ago, we were in the zoo or something like that, and that parrot, you know, that was on my shoulder, went down and actually started eating my G-Shock and ate part of the plastic.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, my kids thought it was hilarious. You know.
Not so much the watch.
No. The watch at that point began to deteriorate. Once the seal was broken, that was it.
Yeah, that was the game.
Man. Yeah, apparently.
What a jerk of a bird.
A jerk of a bird? I don't know, but you know, that's the way it is.
Real jerk. Real jerky in your watch.
Maybe he was being starved.
Oh, could be.
I don't know. I don't know how much they would feed him.
That was his little protest method.
Why would he want to eat the plastic on my watch? I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't like that brand of watch. He's a Rolex kind of bird.
a Rolex kind of. He doesn't like G-Shocks. There you go.
Get that practical watch out of here.
That's right. That's true. Okay. Yes. So that's with watches and parrots. And pennies. So he also mentions here, you know, most of my friends have already finished college. Now, I'm a little confused about this because if we've established that George is 2 years older than Harry, it means that it's only been 2 years. So how could his friends have already finished college unless they're possibly going to, you know, 2-year colleges or something like that?
That was my understanding. Like some of his friends were getting associates and not necessarily like bachelors. So they were getting a 2-year degree or something like that to where they were kind of in and out and he just hasn't gotten there yet. Or even maybe he took a year off and worked in order to, you know, kind of get that money together in order to go to college so he can like fully dedicate himself.
No, well, we know that that's what George has been doing. He's been, you know, he's been working in the building loan in order to be able to make money for that. But the question is how long, you know, if it's only been 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now do you know what the term college means? Like where what the etymology of it is?
Ooh, college. No, I want to go towards like the word collegiate or some type of like collective knowledge. Like you go somewhere. Hey, here's a bunch of people that know a bunch of different things, a collective knowledge of sorts. But that's the only thing that I would think of.
Right. Okay. So it actually comes from the Latin verb lego, L-E-G-O, which could also be Lego, you know, which means to collect, gather together, or pick. Which really is amazing to think about it, that the term Lego means to like to collect or gather, you know, because that's more or less what you're doing when you're playing with Lego. You're building things and putting them together. You're gathering things together.
Them getting it. Yeah. I love Legos, man.
Yeah. And so the idea of colleagues is it's basically people who've been selected to gather together, to work together, things like that.
Okay. I like that. I like that definition.
Yeah. So it makes sense. Very cool. Now, what do you think was the very first college in the U.S.? Or actually, let's start with something else. Let's go with, okay, how many colleges do you think there are, colleges and universities there are in America?
Right now in America, I want to say 3,500.
There are 5,916.
Okay. More than I thought, but not like that's a believable amount of colleges.
Yes, but apparently 10 years ago, there were 7,200, and that the 1,300 have closed over the last decade.
That unfortunately I can see too.
Yeah,
that's a bummer, man.
That's right. So, like you said, they have 2-year colleges, which are known as junior or community colleges, which offer an associate degree. But then you can have the 4-year college, which offers a bachelor's, for undergraduates. And things like that. Usually, 4-year institutions emphasize liberal arts curriculum. You know, so that you get a variety of subjects that you're studying. You're not just studying a specific subject the whole time. But do you know what the difference is between a university and a college?
I would assume a university has more featured. Like dormitories and facilities so you could stay versus a college where it's just kind of you roll in, you know, do your studying and learning and then leave.
Okay, that's an interesting way to think of it. But the actual answer is that in universities, they basically do research, and in colleges, they don't.
Oh, so you could get a doctorate at a university but not a college.
That's correct. Nowadays it's changing a little bit, but most colleges you can only get a bachelor's in.
I didn't know that. You know,
sometimes there are colleges that are part of universities and things like that. So therefore, mm-hmm. you know, those you can get, a postgraduate degree, sometimes a master's and sometimes a PhD. But in general, a college is a place where you go there to study to get your undergraduate degree. And the teachers are basically just lecturers. They're not researchers. But in universities, they're actually researchers. Okay, you know, the point is that people go to the professors go to the university in order to be able to do the research, and they have to teach courses along the way, as opposed to someone who's going to a college. In general, they're going there just to teach the courses.
Okay. All right.
Right. So again, he mentions the fact that basically his friends have all pretty much finished college, and you know he has this feeling that if he doesn't get out of Bedford Falls, then he's gonna bust. You know, but I think and you know it goes to show how smart his father is by the way he responds. You know, like he looks at him. You can see on his face that he's somewhat patronizing, but he goes, yeah, you're right, son. You know, he's like, I'm not going to argue with you on this, even though I know you're wrong. and George isn't convinced, and he goes, you see what I mean, don't you, Pop? And Peter's response to him is, "This town is no place for any man unless he's willing to crawl to Potter. Now you've got the talent, son. I've seen it. You get yourself an education and get out of here." So it's very interesting that Peter is saying this, because Peter himself is not willing to crawl to Potter.
No. So, and I think it's just one of those, he just wants better for his son. He's like,
no, but what he's saying is, in order to stay here, you got to crawl to Potter. But he himself is not doing that, and he's staying there. Or is the idea that he added him to the board of directors in some ways crawling to Potter, you know, to try to patronize him or something like that?
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. But we can see that Peter really understands the situation. And at the same time, he also sees George's capabilities. And maybe he looks at it and says, okay, look at what you can do without an education. I'm going to be amazed at what you're going to be able to do when you do get an education. You know, how much more powerful and you know, capable will you be once you have an education?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's how he's looking at it. And George just looks at him and goes, "Pop, you want a shock?" And, you know, Peter smiles a little bit and he goes, "I think you're a great guy."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Peter is obviously, you know, overflowing with joy that his son is able to say something like this to him. And then George looks over at the door, and we see Annie with her head like in the window by the door to the kitchen.
Mm.
And then, you know, he goes, "Did you hear that, Annie?" And she says, "I heard it." "It's about time one of you lunkheads said it."
That's probably my favorite moment in the film. It's such a great line, and then there's enough of a pause to really let it set and to really absorb what's happening, and then there's that levity afterward. Like it's such a perfect moment, and I'm fairly certain it was like at this moment in the film where I'm like, I'm watching something really special. I'm watching something that is such a standout of its era, and I was kicking for not having seen it sooner. Like already only 19 minutes into the movie, I'm like, I am regretting not seeing this that much sooner. But I also think that because of where I am in my life and my age, I think I have such a profound appreciation for lines and moments like this, and just for the film in general. And I feel like if I saw it earlier or sooner, I wouldn't have felt the same.
Correct.
Or I would have had a different reaction.
Possible. Yeah, for sure.
But this is it's hands down my favorite part of the whole film right here.
Yeah.
This moment.
And it shows also that not only does Peter know George, but George understands Peter.
Yeah. Without being so overt and blatant and obvious about it. It's they're kind of like winking and nodding at each other, being like, "No, I get it," without having to actually come out and say it.
Correct. And, you know, have you ever heard the term lunkheads before?
Oh, yeah.
You really? I've never heard it outside of this movie. Have you really? Okay. What does it mean?
Just like a bunch of dum-dums, just a bunch of, you know, you're a bunch of blockheads, a bunch of guys that have finally, like, it's been so obvious in front of your face, like you finally see it kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the literal definition of it is either a fool or an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's in the place where I found this, it also says, you know, similar to meathead.
Never been called meathead, but I've gotten lunkhead from my grandfather on my dad's side a handful of times.
Right. Now, do you know where the term meathead came from?
Meathead would have to be probably just poking fun at just a big dude. We're talking like 6'5", picking up heavy stuff all day. Like, or oh, there it is right there. Probably someone that just handled and carried like heavy meats or worked on a farm where it's more physical labor than it is, you know, using your mental and intelligence. And they probably just like, oh, you're like one of those, you know, meatheads over there, like old Dum Dum over there.
Right. So a meathead is an ungainly, dull, or stupid person, someone who's lazy, disrespectful, or whose beliefs and philosophies clash with another. But it's also a large, muscular, stupid man, especially an athlete. And this
those
word
feel like two very different definitions to me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Completely. Well, no, they both deal with the fact that someone's stupid.
You know? Oh, yeah. But the other one goes very, very deep into that. The other one's like, ah, just a big dummy. A big athletic dum-dum.
That's right. And, I mean, the phrase can actually be traced all the way back to 1863. But it is most popular from because of the TV show All in the Family.
Really?
Because Archie Bunker would call his son-in-law, Mike Stivic, who was played by Rob Reiner, and he would constantly refer to him as a meathead throughout the entire run of the show.
Okay.
You know, because that's also, I mean, I'm not sure if you're, have you seen episodes of All in the Family?
Clips and bits and pieces here, but never sat down and like watched, you know, episodes or anything.
Right. So it's a very politically charged show, you know, showing the extremes of both spectrums of politics. And this was in the 1970s.
Mm.
So after she says this, so, you know, you can really feel that, you know, she's part of the family. She's not just
absolutely.
She's not just someone who's being paid to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then George goes, I'm going to miss old Lanny. And then he like looks up for a second and then he goes, Pop, I think I'm going to go get dressed and go over to Harry's party. So first of all, I think it's funny that he's calling it Harry's party, you know, even though he is the Eats committee, but still. Mm. You know, I don't know if I would refer to it as Harry's party. I mean, it's Harry's graduating class's party or whatever it is. But we also don't really get any real impression or real reasoning as to why he decides that he wants to go.
The conversation kind of reached that apex and he knows it. He's like, you know, all we're going to do is continue to talk in circles. Or maybe he just realizes, you know, that was such just a beautiful and tender moment. Like, why change that feeling? Why not just leave that feeling there and walk away while everybody's in good spirits?
Okay. That's fair. And that's how the minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, that's just – it's just a powerful moment tucked in there, and you're not expecting it at all.
Nope.
And all of a sudden, it's just here comes this left, and it's like, whoa. Just right. Wow.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, what we've said this entire week is that, you know, on subsequent watches, this scene is even more poignant than the first time you see it because of the fact of what's going to be happening over the course of the next, 2 weeks. We're going to see or we're going to actually hear what happens, you know, that type of thing. Every Thursday, we have a segment called Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Jimmy Stewart performances. Obviously, you know, he's prominently featured in this movie, but he has many other movies under his belt. So do you have five on your list, or are they is this a wish list again?
I have exactly five on my list.
Okay.
It works out perfect.
That works.
Coming in at number five, Anatomy of a Murder. It's a long movie, but there's something about just his character and the way he's able to piece everything together and present and just, I guess, just talk in a way. Like, I like watching Jimmy Stewart talk. I like listening to Jimmy Stewart talk. There's something about the way he just delivers that just works for me, and this is just a real showcase of that. I really enjoyed him in Rear Window, number four. Number three, Vertigo. You'll notice a theme here. Number two, I really like him in Rope. I think Rope is hugely underrated as an Alfred Hitchcock film and just as a film in general. And I recommend it to everybody as often as I can. And then number one, It's a Wonderful Life, because this is just – it's such a good movie. And he is so just – outstanding in it the entire time. There's not a moment There's not a bad moment with him in this film.
Okay. That's definitely, I can definitely agree with that. All right, great. So, Nick, you want to once again tell people where they can find Nick Rehak?
Absolutely. You can kind of find me everywhere. You can absolutely find me, rabbitholepodcasts.com, over on Lyrical Innuendo and Play MST for me. You could also find me guesting kind of everywhere, it feels. Movies, Films, and Flicks. It's a fantastic podcast. You have the Exploding Helicopter podcast, Bad, Bad, Downright Strange, the Deep Blue Sea podcast. You can find me on a lot of episodes over there. Recently found out I've been on 14 episodes over on that series.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, way more than I thought. Like, so much more. It's almost absurd. but, yeah, I'm out there for sure. And, you know, come find me and give a listen and, you know, see what I have to say.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, you feel like coming back in tomorrow to finish off the week and see what's going on at Harry's party?
I absolutely am.
All right. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.